What I have decided to do is simple. It is cowardly, it is pathetic, but it is simple. I shall pull off the road and call home. If my wife has returned, and if she answers, I will say that my journey has been delayed, that I will be home at about 8 p.m. If she has not returned, if she does not answer, I will turn around, go back to Somerset and stay there. Then I'll commence the divorce proceedings. God, the A303 is a boring road. Is there any more boring road in England? If the fifth car that passes me is white, I will stop and make the call. No, I'm not sure that's a good idea, because if it isn't white, I'll have to start all over again, and there's a limit to how many times I can count five cars without forgetting what number I've reached, and then I might find myself making the call when the fourth car is white, which wouldn't do at all. Let's just say I'll make the call quite soon. Perhaps there's some more pills in the glove compartment. I could do with a few right now. I'm pretty pleased with the decision to make this call. Several things about it appeal to me. Most of all, it's clarity. It is a binary decision. Either this will happen or that will happen. No third dish appears on the menu. The vegetarian option is off. Each alternative will later come with its own consequences. I'm not interested in the consequences at this point. I want a decision. It's a brilliant idea to delegate this decision to an inanimate object. A telephone, in this case. I think the car behind may be following me. There may be another reason why my decision appeals to me. It's a gamble. I've always gambled. I've earned my living by betting on whether the price of a commodity will rise or fall. I've traded futures. We don't call it gambling, of course, especially not now. At least I don't imagine we do. I wouldn't know, since I'm not employed in futures anymore. I expect we call it, I don't know, predictive commodity analytics or something. Only with capital letters. We would have to have capital letters. And initials. We use our own PCA model here. I expect Rupert Loxley says to his clients. Not that he probably has many these days. The car behind is still following me. Of course it is. It wouldn't be behind me otherwise. Anyway, I got fired. When was that? It was on a Friday. A Friday about 5 months ago. There have been times since, I must admit, when I've thought I might be going a bit off the rails. No one else has noticed, or not much. The fact is that I seem to have depended on the job rather more than I thought I did. The point is, and this is the important point, that it's never too late to change. That's why I'm so pleased with my decision. It will bring change. Change is good. The car has turned off. It can't have been following me. Well, it was, but it wasn't intending to. Really ought to make the call. Driving up this pissing awful road, I'm trying to work out how this all started. When I was small, my mother showed me how to grow a carrot from a carrot. She filled a jam jar with water, cut the top of a carrot, ran a cocktail stick horizontally through the stub, and suspended it over the jar, just touching the water. In time, roots sprouted, and when they were strong enough, the plant was translated to the garden and new carrots grew. This was one of the many exciting ways in which I was prepared for adult life. It was on my 60th birthday, 5 months ago, May 2008, that I remembered this. We were having a party at home. I say we, but what I mean is that Judy was having a party and I was a guest, which is not surprising, since I am Judy's husband, and the party was being held in my honour. I think about 20 people were there, our close friends and family. I say our, but what I mean is Judy's close friends, and though they are our children, what feels like Judy's family. After 40 minutes or so, I made my excuses, left the lawn and withdrew to the house. I was intending to visit the cocktail cabinet and down a large scotch for additional fortification, which I did. Having done so, instead of returning to the lawn, I poured a larger one and went upstairs. I walked to the bedroom window and looked out over the lawn on a perfect May evening. The scene from the window was a distillation of life present, of life cumulative to date. None of it seemed to have a great deal to do with me, and nothing whatsoever to do with how I had imagined my life 40 years earlier. It was this that made me think of the carrots, because what Judy had done, it seemed to me, was to cut me off in my prime, suspend me in water for a while, then transplant me to other soil, her soil, to produce a different carrot. I felt a pang of nostalgia for the original carrot that had been sacrificed to this endeavour. Thinking of that metaphor now, all I would change is to extend the accusation levelled at Judy and include myself on the charge sheet for letting it happen. Judy had brought a new dress for this occasion from the smartest boutique in Barnet, which is not saying a great deal. She was talking to the chief executive of my company, the long and grinding toad called Rupert Loxley. Sarah, our daughter, was talking to Zoe, partner of Adam, our son. Adam was talking to Rufus, Sarah's partner. I couldn't hear what they were saying. I didn't need to. Adam and Rufus would be discussing computer games and how many thousands of virtual people they could kill with them. Sarah and Zoe would be engaged in a wide-ranging conversation comprising, but by no means limited to, the noise levels in various clubbing establishments, the best Taylor Swift song ever, and 20 original ways of styling your pubic hair. As for the friends who were there that evening, all I can say is that they weren't. Friends, I mean. They were acquaintances, who now needed to be called friends because of the countless times we had seen them. At some point, Judy came indoors to find me. Her eyes travelled to my whiskey glass, which has become their default point of focus. "It's not a very good idea to get tight when your boss is here." "Why did you invite him, then? I didn't want to see him."
"Matthew, I think you might make an effort. Tonight of all nights, everyone's come to see you."
"Stop hassling me, Judy. I'll be down in a few minutes." I think I may have seen a tear in her eye as she left the room. I felt like a shit. I wondered sometimes whether I was trying to provoke her into leaving me. If so, that would be a poor strategy. Judy is not the leaving type. Judy is the soldier on and make the best of it type. It was another 20 minutes and 2 whiskies later before I came downstairs. I was issued with a Prosecco, and Adam and Rufus wheeled a small trolley through the French windows with a large cake upon it. It was one of those bespoke cakes made at home by women who don't pay tax, for which they charge outrageous prices plus VAT, which they don't pay either. I lopped a large slice off the cake, and everyone clapped and laughed as if it was the cleverest thing they'd ever seen. Judy said a few words of breathtaking banality, and then it was my turn. But I hadn't prepared anything. I had deliberated and procrastinated before copping out with a decision to be spontaneous for once in my life. I knew it was a mistake when I decided on it, even more so when I opened my mouth. On the spur of that moment, it seemed like a funny idea. I would briefly recapitulate the flaws and inadequacies of everyone present. Just as people were starting to become uneasy, I would proceed to catalogue my own flaws and inadequacies. Then I would conclude that it's our failings that make us lovable, or some such crap, and aver my deepest love for all present. It may not have been a good idea in the first place. It is also true that I dwelt on everyone else's flaws and inadequacies for longer than I'd intended. I was approaching the bit about my own flaws when I felt my leg subsiding. I slipped, with some elegance, I believe, into a nearby wicker chair and passed out. When I awoke, it was the early hours of the morning. No lights were on in the house. I had disappeared into the shrubbery at the side of the house for a pee when Sarah and Adam walked out onto the patio. I stood around the corner and eavesdropped.
I wonder where he's got to,
said Sarah. Pissed off, with any luck, said Adam.
Don't be like that. He needs help.
If you ask me, things started to go wrong when he didn't get the top job, said Adam. That's when the drinking started. How long ago was that?
About 3 years, exactly the time that Mum was ill.
Hate to think how much booze has gone down the hatch since then.
It can't have been easy for him, said Sarah. He was brilliant with Mum, even if he was on the bottle. All that time he took off work to look after her, it must have been a really difficult time for him.
Well, it was a bloody difficult time for Mum, too, and she coped with it a lot better than Dad did. Don't know how she puts up with him, Saz.
He's not himself, Adam. You can see that, can't you?
Come on, said Adam. Let's get some coffee.
They went back inside. Was that when it started? With Judy's illness and my being passed over? It was a difficult time, certainly. There was nothing I could do except be there. At least I did that. Adam was right. That was when the drinking got out of control. But I think it may have started way earlier. Before Judy, even. I think it may have started when I lost my brother. When I lost faith in the indissoluble goodness of life. I don't think I've ever expected things to go right since then. Sarah must have seen me from the kitchen. A little while later, she came into the garden with 2 mugs of coffee and sat in the chair next to mine.
Come on, Saz, I said. You'd better tell me. How bad was it?
It was pretty bad.
I paused before the big question.
How's your mother? Not good. She's very upset. I tried to explain to her what I had meant to say, what I hadn't got around to saying before I passed out. Perhaps you decided to collapse when you'd said everything you really wanted to say.
All right, I said, all right. I screwed up. I apologise. I'll perform any obeisance required of me at the altar of decorum. I'll try not to do it again. It turned out that a great deal of obeisance was required over the following days. I made my peace with Judy, who is a kind and understanding and forgiving woman, and a woman who loves me, none of which facts I may have mentioned previously. I had to deal with the idiot Rupert Loxley myself. I don't think my jibes about him had any bearing on what proved to be about to happen. Really not. It would have happened anyway. My only regret on that front was that I failed to say in public that he was the biggest arsehole I had ever met. But I never got to the section on his good points.